Could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tangeray, S as in Steve Nash, M as in Mother. Kennedy Miller.
Yes, sir.
Where can the folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at underscore Kennedy Miller underscore. Again, that's underscore Kennedy, as in the former North Carolina star Kennedy Meeks. Miller, as in the three-point marksman Mike Miller, underscore Kennedy Miller underscore.
All right, all right. Aaron, my man.
You can find me on Twitter at SlendermanZ00. That is Slenderman, like the video game, Z, like Dragon Ball Z, and two zeros.
All right. All right. Let's get this show on the road. So the NBA playoffs are a week. They have a week in the books, a playoff. So what we're going to do today here on the Game Plan Podcast, we're going to do the report card. We're going to hand out A's, some B's, some C's, some D's, and somebody got to catch this F. So let's get started. We're going to start off with the Brooklyn Nets. They are currently down 0-2. To the Boston Celtics. Game 3 is tonight in Brooklyn. So, Kennedy Miller, how are you going to grade the Brooklyn Nets so far?
I give them a C-. You know, besides Kyrie's great performance in Game 1, you know, they haven't looked like the true contenders that I know that they are. Number one, we all know that their defense was below average this year, but you would think that they would have made more efforts, especially against a team as big as the Celtics, to kind of adapt to that and not have like a guy of Seth Curry's stature on a guy like Daniel Tice to start the game. So I give them a C- just because their stars haven't looked that good. Kyrie and KD are really struggling so far in the first two games of this series. And, you know, defensively, they're not really doing a good job of game planning and stopping the Boston Celtics. Now, do I think they'll win today? Of course I do. I don't think that they'll go down 3-0 in the first round, but it's not been a good series so far for the Brooklyn Nets.
And what do you think?
I'm going to give them a D. The second game is why I'm giving them a D. The combined performance from Kyrie and KD in the second half, not even just the fourth quarter. If I'm not mistaken, I believe they were 1-for-17. That is just unacceptable. And with context, that is especially unacceptable when you have the greatest, you know, the most dynamic backcourt probably of all time. I can't think of two guys in the top five or top 10, we could argue, in the same backcourt, and they go 1-for-17 in the second half. That's concerning. And I don't agree with Kennedy on one thing. I think Boston wins today. I think with the way they've been playing defense, Marcus Smart is on cloud nine with that DPOY award, and they're clicking on all cylinders on defense. So I give the Nets a D. I give Boston an A++ for how they've been performing. Even with game one, despite it being a game winner, how the game winner came about, it was grit, it was chaos, and they made the right plays at the right time. And it seems like defensively, I know, like Kennedy said, I know the Nets are bad, but this is kind of getting to the point where if you can manage to score 125 to 135 points against the Nets, you're probably going to win. They can't stop you. They really can't, you know. So if you can just manage to get past that threshold of 100 and let's say 125 points, if you can manage to get past that, your odds for winning go up exponentially. And so honestly, that's why I'm picking Boston. I think their defense is going to cover for a lot of the firepower that the Nets are supposed to be showing. And I think Boston pulls this out on the road.
So for me, I got to give Brooklyn a D for damn. I almost want to give them a W for what are you doing? Because my biggest issue with this team is they have two of the more talented players in the NBA, right? And a lot of times in the NBA, like in the regular season or in some playoff series, talent alone can just get you there. Because sometimes the other team just does not have the manpower or the ability to stop you. But in a series where the margins are much more slim and the talent level is much more comparable. Now, I don't think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are on the talent level or skill level of a Kyrie Irving or a Kevin Durant, but those are very, very good players. And their supporting cast is a bit better. And they have better coaching. And coaching is, for me, the biggest issue going on in Brooklyn, because when Kevin Durant was struggling mightily in that second half, Steve Nash was just standing there with his thumb in his ass, continually calling the exact same play. And all that was cleared out, hand the ball to Kevin Durant. And that was not working at all. Not at all. You'd think maybe, just maybe, try to get Kevin Durant, move him off the ball. Maybe get him some decent open shots, right? Have him go around a couple of screens. Something. Maybe have Kyrie Irving initiate the offense. But why is Kyrie Irving just standing on the wings ready to shoot the ball? And then, because for me, I've been watching Steve Nash this entire season, and he's just been giving me Mike D'Antoni vibes. And the biggest Mike D'Antoni vibe, Kennedy, you know what I'm about to say. Not making adjustments. Steve Nash has plan A. Hand the ball to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You know what plan B is if plan A ain't working? Keep handing the ball to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. We ain't really running no plays. We just rolling them out there. Like, Ken, I think my 2-year-old nephew can coach the Brooklyn Nets better than Steve Nash at this point. Because Steve Nash don't do nothing but just stand there. Jason Garrett, at least that motherfucker clapped. At least BBW Jason Garrett pretends to, you know, care or do something. Right? Steve Nash just stands. He just stands there and looks confused. Like, you have to, why are they paying him money? He's stealing that Russian's money at this point. He's stealing.
Well, what I will say is, like, you brought up a really good point that, you know, this comes down to, it is a small margin that changes between victory and defeat. And the reason I gave him a C minus and not a D is because in both of those games, there were times where down the stretch, I'm like, okay, well, Brooklyn's about to win this. You know, whether it be the first game when, you know, Kyrie was cooking and it looked like, you know, they were about to take over. And then the second game where, you know, they got up by 17 in the first half. And then, you know, by the time that, you know, I tuned in, because I was kind of busy at that point, I ended up rewatching it. But when I tuned in, you know, it was 81-81. And at that point, both stars were struggling on both sides. Now, Boston ended up pulling away because, like Aaron pointed out, Kevin Durant and Kyrie shot terrible in the second half. One thing I will bring up, though, I think they're missing a point guard. As much as we get on James Harden for playoff failures and not showing up in big games, when James Harden was there, Patty Mills was on pace to have the best three-point shooting season of his career. They were shooting the lights out when James Harden was there. And, you know, look what he's doing in Philly. He's not putting up great numbers, but you got guys like Tyrese Maxey getting off. You got guys like Tobias Harris playing well, and Embiid, you know, leading the league in scoring, which he was doing. You know, you can make the argument before James Harden got there. But for them to have traded James Harden and basically only gotten Seth Curry and a fat Andre Drummond that they don't play in second halves for the most part, it's they're missing a somebody that can, like you said, distribute the offense. Hey, KD, get off the ball. Let's go off ball. Kyrie, we can do these ball screens. We can get you going as well. But they don't have that playmaking guy. Both of those guys are saying, okay, give me the ball at the elbow. Give me the ball at the top of the key. We might run a screen and roll for each other. But the thing that Boston is doing so well, or the advantage that Boston has, is that who are you going to switch on? Because this is what the whole NBA is about. It's what the whole NBA is about. We're just going to get a screen and roll for our main guy. We're going to try and switch on the worst defender and attack. Boston, who you going to switch on if you don't have Peyton Pritchard in the game? You got Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, you know, Daniel Tice. You're going to have to work for everyone. And you can tell that they've done a great job of game planning for those guys and some for some of their tendencies, even though that they're great players.
I also just thought about this. Ben Simmons is supposed to be playing in game four. And I don't know what I'm supposed to expect out of Ben Simmons at this point. The last time we saw Ben Simmons play, he passed up a layup 2 feet from the basket.
I can tell you what to expect. You could probably expect limited minutes, solid defense, and maybe a couple of highlights. But for anybody that's expecting all NBA first team defense, Ben Simmons out there in game four after missing so much time, I just don't see how that's possible. He may be able to contribute, but it's not going to be something that's going to really impact the game. I'm not predicting a Ben Simmons impact.
Yeah, because my bad, Ken. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. But what I was going to say is, I think the role that you expect him is what you see Bruce Brown play. And that's just as a screener. And when they trap the screens, he just goes downhill and operates on the mismatch, kind of like a Draymond Green role in the Warriors. And so were you just about to say that, Alex?
I was going to say, at this point, it has gotten so bad for Ben Simmons. We have just seeded the idea that he's like going to be a number one or number two. Like, this is the number one overall pick in the draft. Probably one of the most talented players, like, just physically we've ever seen. And right now we're talking 5 or 6 years later. What he is waffle colored Draymond Green. Damn.
That's important. That's important for a championship, right? Like, you know, like, obviously it's not the expectations that we had of him. You know, it's not the LeBron James, the Magic Johnsons or whatever, but I do remember people saying that he might never develop a jump shot and he might be Draymond Green 2.0 coming out of college. That type of role in this NBA is crucial to winning a championship.
I was going to say, but you don't draft somebody number one overall to be Draymond Green. You know what I'm saying?
True.
Go ahead, Aaron. My fault.
No, you're good. I was just going to say, I feel like we're kind of not beating up on Ben Simmons, but this isn't just Draymond Green for what it's worth. His defense is staple. I mean, he's one of the greatest defenders to me of all time. And that's why he's been such a impact for the Warriors. But we're talking about Ben Simmons here. Like, this is a guy, three-time All-Star, two-time first team, third team defense. This is the rookie of the year. This was a guy who led the league in steals back in the bubble. I mean, if you throw him in the mix, this isn't a guy, despite him playing that role, he will have more to offer when he is, I would say, not fully healthy or fully, what's the word I'm looking for? When he's
right,
in shape.
Right.
When he's in shape. He's going to have more to offer than just a glorified Draymond Green role. Because of what you said, Alex, he was drafted number one, and he's one of the greatest talents that we've seen. At 6'10", I mean, this guy is basically he's like a reincarnation, a little bit of Magic Johnson. When Magic came in at 6'9", big, swole 6'9", fast, shifty, with gifted ability to pass the ball and great defense. I mean, if I was to give you that description right now of a guy in the NBA, and this was 2 years ago, you'd say Ben Simmons. A 6'9", athletically gifted passer who plays great defense. So, you know, he did have a bad falling out in Philadelphia. That was bad. If he can recover from that mentally, though, we're talking about a guy who really does turn Brooklyn into way more of a contender than they are now. That's the defensive, the anchor that they could use to really carry them over the hump. Should Kyrie or KD have a bad shooting night? Should both of them have a bad shooting night? You can throw Ben Simmons pretty much around the court. He's 6'10". And he's going to be able to play some solid defense, at least for the 1-3, guaranteed. You can throw him on a 4, and we'll see depending on the 4. But, you know, this is a guy who covers a lot of ground.
I think,
you know, even in passing lanes and stuff like that.
I think my issue with Ben Simmons overall is that I didn't expect this to be his ceiling. And also, my question is with Ben Simmons is, has he talking to a professional yet? Has he sat on somebody's couch and talked to them about why he's scared to shoot free throws or why he didn't want to shoot the ball yet? right?
I hope so.
Because if he hasn't, like, that's something that's kind of gone undercovered in all of this is like, yo, has he figured out why he don't want to shoot the ball? Has he gotten past that mental block in his head? Because the last time I saw him play, that is the enduring memory that is burned in my head right now, Ben Simmons. Like, it's just burned in my head. And that's why, like, defensively, he can be that in the whole 9 yards. But what happens if they pass in the ball two feet from the bucket? Is he going to pass it out again to, like, Seth Curry to shoot a three? Like, is that what it's going to be? But let's move this thing along. To the Golden State Warriors, they are up 3-0. And they're looking to close out Jokic and the Nuggets. Ken, how you gonna grade the Warriors?
I'll give them an A+. I mean, they're doing what they're supposed to do, and they're getting a contribution from, you know, an unlikely member. I don't want to say unlikely, because if you've been watching the regular season, you know he can play. It's just surprising because this is his first playoff appearance. But, you know, Jordan Poole is balling, and he adds a different element to their team, and it kind of, you know, gives them a mini death lineup of what they used to have with, you know, Poole, Curry, Clay, you know, Draymond and Wiggins. And so, you know, like I said, they're doing what they're supposed to do against Denver. I did predict Denver to win a game or two, but I'm not surprised that, you know, they're on the verge of being swept because they just don't have enough. They don't have enough scoring. And with the way that Jokic plays and how he's built, Golden State is just running him around the entire court and making him work. So I give them an A+, and I think that it's going to be an interesting series, which, you know, I think they'll play Memphis in the next round. I think that's where their real test will begin.
Aaron?
I'm going to give them an A, just an A, for simply the same reason, actually. Funny that Kennedy said it. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing against a depleted Denver team. I will say one thing for Denver. Despite my feelings for Jokic, I do think he deserves the MVP this year, solely because of the fact that they had that place in the seeding with, you know, the injuries they had to their team. I mean, he's out there doing it with Will Barton and Monte Morris, whatever his name is. These guys aren't, you know, top of the line guys, but Jokic is. And he is still, even despite that, he's putting up the number. It's funny how they're like, oh, get him some help. You know, his team around him is not performing. He's putting up all these numbers. Who does that sound like? That sounds like a guy who's not in the playoffs, who's 37 years old, who dominated the season, but, you know, his team around him. But for him, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's different context. What do I know?
Ken mad as hell. Look at Ken's face.
Let me get back on topic to finish my point, I'll give Golden State an A because while they are doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're doing it at an elite level. Jordan Poole, like Kennedy said, if you've been watching, you aren't really surprised, but me, I'm still kind of surprised because he's doing, it's just so consistent. You usually expect you get jitters, you know, something happens that kind of throws you off your game. But for Jordan Poole, he's kind of becoming not the X factor, but kind of the guy that if he's on, you can kind of book it for the night. It's pretty much over. If he's on along with Clay, along with Steph, you know, your odds for winning decrease dramatically.
So I'm going to agree with you guys. I think we're all in. Most teams that have a long extended run upper echelon of the NBA in terms of contention. So we're thinking of the 90s Bulls. We're thinking of the Spurs making those runs from 99 really to 2015, 16. We're thinking of this Warriors group and that those Kobe and Shaq Lakers from late 90s going into the early to mid aughts. At some point, they all made an addition that extended their run. Right. So for the Bulls, it was Kukoc and Rodman. For San Antonio, it was trading for Kawhi Leonard draft night 2011. For the Lakers, it was adding Payton and Malone at the end of their run. They made it to the finals. For this team, it's adding Jordan Poole. And to me, like, I actually looked at Jordan Poole's numbers this morning before we got on. Jordan Poole is shooting 66% from the field, 59% from the three-point line, and putting up 28. Yeah, like, if he regresses just back to shooting, you know, league average from the 3-point line, right? And getting closer to like 45, 46% from the field, the Warriors are probably still going to roll. And, you know, this whole thing of having Steph off the bench, you talking about having Big Joker just sitting in your hand and then dropping it at the very end, like, bam, that's what that is, right? So, Ken, I think the Warriors and Jordan Poole, I think we might have to eat a little bit of crow from our predictions on Monday, like on last week's show.
We might. I'm holding out because, like I said, Denver is just, even at their ceiling, I saw them as a second round team. But, you know, with those two guys being out, you know, they have, I saw a stat that they have the, Aaron Gordon is their second leading scorer. He averages the least amount of points for a second leading scorer in the playoffs. He only averages 15 points a game. 10 teams in the playoffs right now have a second leading scorer that's averaging 20 a game. So that's what I'm saying, when they just don't have enough. Now they got into the playoffs because they have a core of guys that have been together for years. You bring up Will Barton and Monty Morris, and Aaron Gordon has even been there. This is his second or third year. But all of these guys have a continuity of playing together where they're just missing their second or third leading scorer, which can win them regular season games, kind of like Utah. But, you know, in the playoffs, you're going to need a guy that can go get a bucket. And as good as Jokic is, and I don't think he deserves the MVP, but I'm not surprised by it. As good as Jokic is, he's not that guy like a KD, Giannis, Embiid is showing it, that can go win you games in the playoffs. Big games.
Absolutely. Moving on to the last team on the report card, the Dallas Mavericks. They are up 2-1 without Luka Doncic against Utah. Yes. Aaron, the floor is yours.
Oh, yes. Okay. Whew, let me gather myself here. I'm going to give them A+ × 1,000. No, that's not good enough. An A+ × 1,000,000, and then you can add another million, and then take like Donald Trump's money and stack it by $1 bills and add on top of that.
He's drunk.
These dudes, for just with the context, that's one of my favorite words, context, because it's very, very important. Every year in the playoffs, every year, it's very important. And this year in particular, we are going into the playoffs arguing amongst ourselves as Mavs fans. Should Luka have played? Should we have tried to get the third seed? I mean, here was the situation. I'm sure you guys both know, but for those who don't, last game of the season, we're playing San Antonio. Golden State is playing whoever that they beat by 30, right? If we win and Golden State loses, we then take the third seed. Correct me if I'm wrong here. We then take the third seed, and we'd be the ones beating up on Denver, which right. I'm okay with. They are depleted. I am more than okay with playing the MVP if the rest of the team isn't there, right? But I was okay with playing Utah. So once they were up 20, and you know these guys check the scores of these games. Once you're up 20, just sit Luka. Just pull him out. Let's have him healthy. It didn't happen. It didn't work out that way. It actually worked out the worst way possible. But for them to lose game one, and you know, I kind of saw it coming with the game one loss. Spencer Dinwiddie missed 6 free throws. We lost by 6. We shot poorly from the free throw line overall. We shot poorly from the 3-point line overall. And we got out-rebounded, of course, by a lot. And we only lost by 6 points. So, for them to come back, and Jalen Brunson has been just, I mean, we all knew he had this type of talent. Teams have been trying to get him since the middle of the season. But for him to do what he has been doing these past 2 games, that right there, his next contract just got bumped up from 20 mil to about 24, 25 mil per year. I can tell you that. I mean, if not from Dallas, that's going to be his asking price. Again, with context, because of what he's done with these first 2 games. Hey, Luka went out. We're going against a fully healthy Utah Jazz team. I had to go out there and put this team on my back. I had to score 76 points in 2 games just to get us up 2-1 and have us in position to, you know, to carry on through the playoffs. And because of that, who knows what happens now? Devin Booker's out for 3 weeks. We're gonna take care of Utah, and then we play the Suns without Devin Booker. I like our chances a little bit better without Devin Booker. So who knows what these two, who knows how important these two games that Jalen Brunson just gave us. And it's not only Jalen Brunson. I mean, Maxie Kleber. I mean, like, what in the world? Who, I guess he went back to Space Jam and touched the basketball and got his powers back, because this guy all of a sudden becomes a sniper again. I'm not complaining. Please continue to stay that way. I'll wrap it up. Overall, Dallas Mavericks, super A+, and I'm super excited to see what they're going to do, how they're going to finish this off. And I predict a win today. Let me just clarify that. They're definitely winning today.
So part of me is more looking at Utah with this whole thing. Like, what the hell are y'all doing? Like, this is the second year in a row the best player in the series who happened to play for the other team is hurt, and you can't finish the deal. Right? Like, this is what, when you know a team ain't for real. This is how you know they fugazi. This is how you know they chain is fake. Right here. Cause they should smell blood in the water. You should. And you don't. Or maybe you do, but you just can't finish the deal. Look, man, I think Jalen Brunson's a fine player, but if old face Jalen Brunson is putting 40 on your ass, it's a problem. It's a problem. It is. But I'm gonna get a Mavs an A. Kennedy Miller, what you got?
I'll give them an A for all the points that Aaron so eloquently put out. Without their best player, I think Utah has been kind of crumbling since about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the regular season ended, just them blowing all those leads. I think that they're, where there's smoke, there's fire. I do think that, you know, those two stars, whether they don't get along with each other or, you know, are fed up with the organization, they would rather be somewhere else. Yeah, I think Dallas is doing what it's supposed to do. Jalen Brunson is playing his butt off. Maxie Kleber's playing well. Is Luka playing today?
Apparently from Wolves, there's growing optimism he can play on a minutes restriction, but who knows?
I wouldn't play him until
you need him.
You know, until I need him, until the series was tied. You know, if Utah wins today, then I'd try and play him. But no, I think Dallas is rolling and Utah is reeling. So it'll be interesting to see, like he said, if Dallas wins this series, Devin Booker's availability, and how that next series will pan out.
Honestly, I think, just the last point, I think with the Utah Jazz, it's a combination of the two stars and something going on with them. We don't know for sure, because Donovan Mitchell, every chance he gets, downplays it, but it's so obvious on the court. And then with that, you add the fact that Donovan Mitchell, he really is the one to me that does not look like he wants to be there. It looks like he wants to get out of Dodge. So I think that's probably another reason why Dallas is able to do what they've been doing, because Donovan Mitchell just seems totally disinterested.
We got to leave it right there, but we will be right back with more of the Game Plan Podcast on the other side of the break. Coming up next, the price of a brick for wide receivers is going up. I'll tell you whose fault it is when we come back. This is the Game Plan Podcast. Moving on to the NFL. So the draft has not been really much to speak of. Weak quarterback draft. But there has been a lot going on in the NFL in terms of disgruntled wide receivers. And there is one man to blame for this. Christian Kirk. I'm going to use a metaphor. Hopefully this kind of can help explain my point here. Have you ever seen a dude that is not the most aesthetically attractive? His clothes don't look particularly good. You know, he just, you know, he ain't really got no kind of sauce, no kind of drip, no kind of nothing. Right?
Yes.
And that dude somehow, some way winds up with a dime. And you yourself might be looking around like, look, if that dude can outkick his coverage like that, this gives me hope. Not alone hope, but assurance that I can do this too. And I will. That's what all the receivers was looking at Christian Kirk and saying. Because Christian Kirk is a wide receiver that's never crossed 1,000 yards. He's never had more than 80 catches. His new 4-year, $72 million contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars, he has $38 million guaranteed over the first 2 years. So that, of course, drove the wide receiver market up. Devontae Adams got a big deal from the Raiders. Tyreek Hill got his money from the Miami Dolphins after he and the Chiefs had been discussing an extension. But after the Devontae Adams deal, they were like, nah, we ain't about to pay you that much money. And now A.J. Brown's looking for some more money. D.K. Metcalf's looking for some paper. Deebo Samuel asked for a trade. And you know what team I think is the biggest loser in all of this?
Who?
The Dallas Cowboys.
I knew in my heart you were going to say that.
Because you know I'm right. Look, man, the Dallas Cowboys gave Amari Cooper away for a Subway coupon and a Section 8 housing voucher, man. They didn't
have a choice. Everybody knew he was gone.
But I'm saying, the best they got was a 5 out of this here, man. I ain't saying they was gonna be able to get back a haul, a 4 or 5 pick haul like the Chiefs got back for Tyreek Hill, or like the Raiders got for Devontae. But I'm saying, damn, you could at least got a 2 or 3 out of this. You got a 5. That 5th round pick probably ain't gonna make the team.
The Cowboys have nobody to blame but themselves. They let the cat out of the bag and talked about how they were going to cut him, and then were like, okay, well, we'll probably resign. You never know. And then, you know, cut bait, or not cut bait, but essentially cut bait by trading him away for a 5th and 6th swap. I mean, had the Cowboys just not said anything, we might have gotten a 2nd, 3rd, but, you know, they didn't have a choice once they talked about it. Was already a foregone conclusion that he probably wasn't going to get paid, but you still leave the sense of curiosity in the air. They completely eradicated that and then tried to get a deal for him. You told me something was worthless and then said, let's bargain for it. What are you, dumb? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But to answer the question for the Dallas Cowboys front office, yes, they are dumb. They are very stupid. I won't continue, but it's a very frustrating thing with Amari Cooper. He shouldn't have been gone in the first place, but what about him?
My other thought was, so the whole Debo Samuel asking for a trade thing, and sometimes, like, with teams, most times having to get rid of extremely talented players, most times this happens once your quarterback gets expensive. So the Devontae Adams thing, I can understand. The Chiefs and them having to get rid of Tyreek Hill because just contractually, they weren't going to be able to pay him that much money. That makes sense. Now, the 49ers, I don't for a second think they're going to move Debo Samuel. Number one, because they have a young quarterback that's going to be under center next year, and your quarterback is young and inexpensive. They have the money to pay Debo Samuel if they so desire. Like, the only way I see them possibly moving on from Debo Samuel is if they get some crazy haul of picks back. But even then, I still might hesitate. Because how many of those picks will possibly be the talent, or in total composite, equal up to the talent that you've gotten out of Debo Samuel?
Right. No, I get you. You know, that Christian Kirk deal, those deals that Jacksonville made in general, you know, just spending money, Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, all those skill positions, it was very eye-opening because it wasn't like any of the moves were like, wow, like that guy's a stud. It was like, well, that guy's okay. He's okay too. He's okay. And it's like, it seems like to me, you're just giving Trevor Lawrence stop gaps. You know, whereas you see these great quarterbacks and you always try and pair them with a great receiver or a young receiver that can grow with them. You know, like Peyton Manning, you don't want to mention his name. We don't have to mention his name, but who they paired him with early on in Indianapolis.
Not Reggie Wayne, but the other dude.
Not Reggie Wayne, but the other dude.
Yes, yes, yes. You ain't about to get me killed up here. Continue.
Right. So I just, you know, I think that the market is going crazy. I do think that, you know, they won't let Debo go. You know, part of it, I think, is the contract. Another part, you know, what was reported is that he doesn't want to play that receiver running back role, which I think is really only a role suited for him. Like, I don't think that's a role that, you know, a lot of teams are going to try and experiment with these other cats. I think that's specifically a role for a certain type of guy like Debo. And you can't really pull that off at anybody else. Yeah, this market is going crazy. I'm interested to see what the rest of this offseason looks like. The draft is coming up. So maybe some big trades, but I don't think anybody would give a haul like the 49ers would be looking for.
We go leave it right there because we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. Kennedy Miller, my man.
Yes, sir.
Where can the folks find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at _ Kennedy Miller _. Again, that's _ Kennedy, as in the former president, John F. Miller, as in the former Sacramento King and Chicago Bull, Brad Miller, _ Kennedy Miller _.
All right, Aaron, where can the folks find you on Twitter?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at SlendermanZ00. Again, that is SlendermanZ00. I tried to think of a player with double zeros there. I couldn't find one.
I think like Wes Unseld or somebody, but most of our listeners wouldn't know who that is.
Oh, look at you, Miller is surprised they even heard that name. That's the one from the memory box, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah, I ain't thought about Brad.
I was gonna say
I ain't thought about Brad Miller since that time Shaq almost killed him in like 2002.
That's what I thought. I just saw that video like last week.
Wait, what happened?
When the Kings and the Lakers had a fight and Shaq swung at Brad Miller. And if he would have hit him, he'd have killed him dead.
Yeah.
But you can find me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Tom, S as in Sarah, M as in Mother. Follow the show on Instagram @_TheGamePlanPodcast. Again, follow the show on Instagram @_TheGamePlanPodcast. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. For Kennedy Miller and Aaron Okonafua, this has been the Game Plan Podcast. We'll see you guys next time.